So I've got that it's one after, so why don't we go
Uh-oh, is
ahead?
it me?
It's either way. I was just saying we can go ahead and get started.
Can't hear anything. Uh-oh.
Oh yeah, if can anybody else hear me?
I can hear you.
Well, while Dan is troubleshooting his audio, I'm just going to jump in on the first couple of announcements. First one is just a reminder, if you are interested in proposing something for WolfCon, the deadline is next week on the 25th. Happy to provide feedback if anybody is brainstorming something and would like some feedback. And then the other topic here, just for announcements, is kind of looking forward to April and what we might like to discuss in our April meeting. Dan, do you have audio now?
Yep, sorry. Got
Okay, awesome. Okay.
it.
We don't have to decide this right now, but obviously we need to decide this sometime in the next 4 weeks or so for what we might like to jump into for our April discussion topic. So if you have any strong feelings about what we should be talking about, then please feel free to voice an opinion or stick something in chat or put a vote on Slack for what we should talk about. But I think we do have a fair amount to kind of work through agenda-wise on today's topic. So we'll go ahead and hand it over to Dan to talk about circulation.
Great. Hi, everybody. Glad to be able to hear you. And it's good to see you all again. So I was interested in talking through some or asking you some questions about circulating your materials in a closed stack collection. And as you can see there on the agenda there are a few bullet points. I think I'm curious to hear how folks address the user account creation process. As you know, we have a sign-in link on our ViewFind instance, and then, if folks don't already have an account, there's a link for folks to register. They fill out essentially a Google form, which drops into a spreadsheet, and then our staff create accounts for folks and then communicate back to them with their login information. So I'm just curious to hear how other folks handle that, because that is a significant block for us and something we really have to stay on top of, right?
I just have a question, Dan, and I'm sorry I didn't introduce myself last week. I'm Sarah Lewis. I work with Corey at Winther Library, and I'm the collections management librarian. For when you talk about user accounts, are these people related to where you work or just anybody in general that you're making accounts for?
Oh, sorry. Yeah. So these would be, researcher accounts or public accounts, right? Not necessarily not staff accounts that would work on the back end of Folio, but instead folks that would be placing requests and we'd be serving in the reading room.
Since I'm already speaking, Winather does not allow outside. So the people we allow to have accounts are staff, students, and research fellows, also volunteers. So anybody outside of that doesn't get an account because you require a badge. So our badges act as like a form of a library card. What we do is kind of old school, but you just email us and then we create a document, a Word document for the individual where we will, for the fiscal year, just put down what they're requesting from Special Collections. And then we add it to, because we are very small staff and we don't get as many researchers as probably other places do. So we can do what we are doing currently. And then we just have a calendar that says, oh, such and such person's coming on this day, and this day. And then we look at their doc sheet and then we do the poll for the day. Within the stacks, we do have a poll system that happens. So we use call cards, which are like these things right here. And that's what we put the information on that we need to poll. And then depending on which stack level you're in, like manuscripts, you can either you put it inside of a in like call number order, but in rare, you put it on the shelf to replace where the book is, and that's basically what we do. There are no restrictions on requests, essentially, unless you're asking for a collection that has 30 boxes. We do put a limit on how many things people can get in one go. So whatever fits on a cart is what you get, and it's usually around like 15 to 18 boxes if it's a doc box size. I can talk about reshelving. Reshelving is just done by all the staff members. I generally am on reshelve duty for every week, and then staff members will sign up as well, and then we just shelve throughout all the collections. Is there anything you want to add, Corey? Did I forget something?
I don't think so, but yeah, we're not currently, we haven't leveraged any kind of management in Folio so far.
Okay, great, thanks.
Yeah, I will say we do something somewhat similar, in that we don't create researcher accounts anymore. Our library is no longer open to the public. I think it was slightly different a few years back. But essentially they'll email us, just like Sarah said, at the library at, and then mostly it's our director that facilitates those reading room appointments. So she will page the item with a note saying that it's her reading room appointment, and then it'll be paged by either me or Natalie. Mostly Natalie, and then we'll bring it up to Bree's office. And so then, if she handles the reading room appointment, if I handle it, it's already there, and then we'll just put it ready to go to be reshelved. That generally also only works because we have very few researchers per week that are doing any kind of work. And it works because we have a little cabinet that's locked up here so we can put rare materials and make sure that we're keeping those safe.
I'll add on to what Rylan said about what we do at the PMA. I believe in the past I don't know. So like since moving to Folio, I don't know how they did account creation because our institution used to be open to the public and we did create library accounts for external patrons. So I'm not entirely sure what they did in the past, if it was just someone came up into the reading room when it was manned by staff and then they just manually created an account, or how if they just got requests over email and then created an account that way. I'm not too sure. So I think there are questions about if our reading room becomes open again in a way that it was in the past. I think this is an important conversation similar to PEM, where we would be trying to figure out a solution that maybe would allow, like, I don't know that we would do it the same way that we're doing it right now if we had an open reading room that was frequented on a more regular basis. So I'm glad that we're having this discussion. Should that be something that we have to think about for our own purposes in the future?
Yeah, and I think it also works. I'm thinking about this right now because we're working with our education team and they do like summer programs with their students and their teens, and making it easier for those kinds of patrons to come into the library and request materials might be really nice. But since we don't have a system right now, it really is just kind of either going through the staff member over there who's requesting the materials or, doing something a little bit complicated.
And I'll also just preface that right now, the only way to log into our catalog, there isn't really a username password way. It's all through SSO. So the user, which is typically just staff, they automatically get an Open Athens account because we were able to work with our IT team to kind of like get that single sign-on access with Open Athens connected to Microsoft Azure. So if they have a Microsoft account, it automatically, at the time of them being employed, creates an Open Athens account. And then the only connection that we have to do is the Jira ticket for getting them a Folio account, and that's how they're able to access making requests. So yeah, I guess I just wanted to add that there is no username, no remembering username and passwords anymore. Yeah, just give extra context.
Great. Lauren, do you know if that's what's done at universities, that it's kind of tied into the campus authentication systems?
Frequently, yes.
Yeah.
There's an integration with SSO. You can have SSO both with Folio and with your discovery. But when it comes to getting the new users created within Folio, it varies on frequency, but universities frequently have kind of an ongoing user load that's being pushed out from campus systems with current enrollment, et cetera. Some institutions do that daily. Some institutions just do it once or twice a semester. So that varies a lot in how they get the users into Folio.
Thanks.
I joined a little late because my computer was freezing, but sorry, forgive me if I'm being annoying for this, Dan. Are you just asking about how people are dealing with user accounts for non-staff members?
Yeah, and I mean, initially, yes. If there's anything else on here that you're really burning to talk about, I was kind of intending to go through the list, but.
Yeah, I can share our procedure. We are creating user accounts for non-member researchers. We auto-generated accounts for all of our members because we already had them in the database and gave kind of a standardized password system. But I actually prepped this. This is the form that we give people. It's a couple pages, but broadly, it asks them to create their own username and password. And then the other sort of special category of information that we put in our records is we ask them to give a description of what their research is. For members, we just scoop that right out of the database because there's already a field for collecting interest. So we have that in there, but we thought that would be kind of a helpful thing to have. And for the most part, when people still have to email us to arrange appointments because we don't have like Aon or any systems like that. But when someone emails, we have kind of two form emails that we send. The first prompts people to create a user account. We just take whenever the Google form, it's not a Google form, sorry, the Microsoft form gets filled out, we log that in Folio and make the account manually. And then we send an email saying, like, hey, your account's ready. Here's how to request stuff. And we wanted to do that just to be a little less analog and keep our stats not by hand, and then also have the ability to like see what people have requested in the unlikely event of a disaster. But yeah, that's what we're doing over there.
Great, thanks. Yeah, we're in a similar situation, of course. Thank you. I don't know if anybody really wants to talk in detail about circulation records. We've tried to keep ours very, very simple in that essentially for visiting researchers, we have a one day loan rule, and for library, for exhibitions, for conservation, for curatorial, we have a year or 2 year loan depending on the type of material. But we don't send any notices, we don't charge any overdue fees. I imagine most of us are in a similar situation, particularly if the volume is very small.
We send notices, but mostly it's to ensure, because like if we make let a fellow or an outside researcher create their request, it's like gives them a reminder that like, hey, you have to make sure that you've emailed us to set up your appointment. And then for the members, because they have different privileges, it's the, hey, this might not be ready yet. You'll get an email when this is ready. When it's ready, you can show up whenever. But yeah, so it's just like the two sets of notices that get sent out, one when it's paged and one when we check it in.
Are there any ways in which you might restrict requesting on specific items beyond the use of the restricted status in the item record? We've done some of that manually, but I wasn't sure if there were any other approaches to that.
Yeah, I was gonna say I'm actually thinking of this in a slightly different case. So we fast add our interlibrary loan records to check them out so that it shows up on the user account and will auto send notices for overdues. And then we can go in and change the due date if it's like in WorldCat and it had and we got a renewal. But for those, I think we've considered changing the loan policies to reading room only for patrons that are really struggling to get their interlibrary loans back on time, because we don't necessarily care about, I mean, we do care about our collection and getting it back in a timely manner, but we are less concerned about our own books than other institutions' books. So that is kind of a person by person thing, and that's manually changing the loan policy per, but we can do it because we're creating that record in real time. That's, I think, a specific case, though.
So it's something about that particular record that governs
Yeah,
the application of that policy.
so
Yeah.
if we have our loan policy saying reading room only, then it'll auto send an email with instructions to come up to our second floor reading room as opposed to checking it out in the or picking it up in the basement. So it just means that they have to, and we've changed our policies with that because you used to have to make an appointment for interlibrary loan reading room only, which was getting a little bit tedious. So now we just have them all together in a location in the reading room that's really visible to everybody, and the email reflects that.
So I'm trying to remember what PMA's policies look like, but I think I'm going to speak more broadly that some libraries do this by location, that they just have some location where requests are not an option. You do have, you could do your rules so it would be material type or loan type based, just kind of how that data is inputted into your item records. But you can make those restrictions kind of as granular as you need to. And there's some libraries where you'll have something that gets requested and you realize that this is not in condition for someone to actually take a look at this. And so some of these things to toggle so that you can obviously let the patron know for this one case that the material needs repairs or something like that. But then you can also toggle something within the item record to prevent those requests from being placed in the future.
So with a location-based restriction, like you're saying, like say, you know, anything in our reading room, like we don't want that to circulate, right? Because we want it to stay out there and available. Is that what's my question? How does that then, how is the display then governed? I mean, I know the viewfind or whatever discovery layer you're using is kind of another animal, but how does then that manifest in the catalog? Is it clear to users that it's not requestable, or is it you're clicking the request link and then you're getting told this can't be requested? Does that make sense?
Yes, and I can't speak to all discovery layers,
Yeah.
but I do know that with Viewfind, if you have some things that should have that request button and some that shouldn't, we can parse some of that out based on criteria. Not every layer that you can address here in the loan policies is an option, but like if you have set locations that nothing should be requestable, that can be configured. And I can look a little bit more into kind of what those other options are. But it gets tricky if you have some things that are requestable for some patron groups and not others. That could be problematic. But ultimately, going into the requests, if it's something that's not allowed, they would encounter an error message once it queried against the rules in
Right.
Folio.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I think just for clarity's sake, I'd prefer to be transparent about that up front, right? As
Yeah.
opposed to having folks run into an error.
And there are some libraries that I have seen this mostly in academic institutions that have different policies in some places, and for things that are like a reading room request versus something that circulates in general because they have OpenStax, they have embedded forms so that you can click a link to a form to put in that reading room request, because things are not quite dynamic enough to say in this scenario we do one thing and then we'll page it and go get it and have it on a hold shelf versus this scenario where you need to come to a physical location and view it in-house.
Well, and yeah, now I'm starting. I'm now, Dan, what you're saying is making me think about how we have medium rare things, and it's not always apparent to the user that for whatever reason, and like even for me when I'm pulling the thing, unless the paging slip says like it's in the main stacks, but it's reading room only, like I wouldn't just assume. But it was for whatever reason, it might be related to condition, it might be related to. It's not necessarily rare, but it's scarce. And so instead of moving it and taking real estate in Maine, it's retained in the main stacks. But I'm wondering if there's a better way for us to reflect that the request of the user is going to require a special appointment. Obviously for things that are rare, I think people anticipate that they're going to have to see it, make an appointment and see it in the reading room. But I think specifically for like the medium rare, now I'm feeling like there's probably a better way that we could be reflecting that in our own catalog. Whereas I hadn't really, I guess I hadn't really thought about it before. It's only when it comes up scarcely. So good things to think about.
Yeah, I think I had been, I mean, related to that, I wasn't thinking about that this initially, but we don't, since we're closed stack, we don't really have, well, we have some like super valuable stuff in a fireproof cabinetry, but our stacks are filled with rare books and books that probably shouldn't be handled because they're pretty fragile, and we do have. We do have policies about what can't be circulated to curators down at the museum. We're in a remote facility. But that again, like those aren't reflected in the catalog. And, maybe there is some way for us to restrict those things that are in the stacks but are published before 1830. So maybe that's something for us to think about too, if we want to. I mean, of course, the issue is doing the work to gather all of those gather all of those items and make those changes, but that's an interesting kind of second case where that might those kinds of restrictions might be useful.
I think this is making me think of too. We've gotten like inquiries about like we have things that are books, but then we have collections and archives that are relevant. And the archives catalog is like we don't have any purview over that. The archivists do. So I think I've just been asked kind of in passing, like, well, how can we direct people to also look at the archives cat? Like, what connection can we make? Even though, that would also be linking out of the library catalog. Or if we choose to put MARC records that reflect archival collections, like how do we make it clear that they have to go to this other place to make the appointment? And I think it's just we're thinking about it and like how to make it clear, but it's so yeah, it's not totally set in stone what I think we were going to do or what this might mean for the future, but also it's interesting ideas to think about as, what's going to make it as clear as possible to the people who are requesting the information or guide them to something that they didn't know was also available.
This is reminding me a lot of a question I keep annoying Lauren with about the possibility of having requests be provisional so that for certain materials you could request it, but the request has to be approved. In my dream world, I feel like that's how it would work, where it would be like you put in a request for something, we run to the shelf and check it. Oh my God, there's no way we can deliver this. Everything is falling apart. denied, or, thank you so much for requesting it. Then we could send a notice at that point and then say, hey, you can come in and get this. But yeah, I know that's not it's not coming anytime soon.
Yeah, with doing interlibrary loan, I mean, like you basically mark it as considering. Then I go to the shelf, I see it, and I'm like, oh, there's no way we could, like, so that's kind of, I think, the considering status that we see in ILL is like something that seems like it would be beneficial for our own collection.
Yeah, and Lauren just linked to a mediated request page on the wiki.
I ad admit that at this point, I think this is only available for ECS, which is the consortial environments. But this sounds a lot like what is being described here.
I'm also thinking about materials that are, like super large, right? Like, maybe a curator doesn't notice that this thing is, 3 feet long, and like we're not gonna send it down there, so you gotta come up to see it. But anyway, that's an edge case, but let me see. What else did I have on here? Checking things out and back in. I think maybe we hold that until the for use at location discussion in a little bit. As far as multiple service points, we use two. I don't know what other people do. We have a Stacks, and we have a reading room. So the checking in and checking out happens on the reading room service point. And then things like paging and reshelving happen on the stack service point.
Is that just for like when things are reading remote, like you have a to make a reading room appointment, or is that for like all things that go to your reading room? Like, I don't know if your pickup point is also the reading room.
Yeah, it's for everything. So even when we're checking materials out to curatorial and sending them down to the museum, they get processed through the reading room. I mean, it's not that you can't check them out on the stacks, but it's good to get in the kind of the build the muscle memory of always going to the reading room to do circulation. And then it's the loan rules that govern the
I think that's really interesting. I'm thinking about when I'm creating user accounts, we only have the one hold shelf, the pickup point, which is just PMA library, and that's tied to our ground floor where there's the pickup and drop off carts. But I have noticed some confusion with patrons where they, when they have the ILL reading room only and they have to come upstairs, even though it says it in the email. They just kind of assume they're supposed to go downstairs. Or we also have study carrels that staff members can request, and then we can check out all of those items. So, but there isn't, I don't know, maybe that's like a hold shelf location or something that we somehow can add to their user account. Because right now I think it's kind of just assumed or implied that we put it in that specific spot for them. Instead of the downstairs. I don't know.
Although there is an interesting case where the person who requested everything to be put in their carrel came downstairs and was like, oh, well, actually, can I just take it to my office? So I think that's where there's the con possibility of like, as the people who are pulling the things and trying to accommodate what their needs, if they don't put it in the notes that they would prefer to just come down and pick this up or. Oh, these specific are ones I want delivered to my carrel, but otherwise, yeah, I think the checking it out to a specific location also would maybe potentially be helpful to reduce the chances of them thinking it's in one place and then I don't know, for either on our end checking it going to do different places or on their end thinking it's one place and then actually wanting it in a different place. In any case, we don't have multiple checkout locations, but I think. To when transferring placement of items, like moving things from the stacks, checking them out. Maybe it would be a decent idea to put them, like, if they're going to the rare cabinet, they get like checked out to that area. We just haven't implemented anything along those lines, but this conversation is helpful because at least other people have done something along those lines already.
I think one of the ways it's been beneficial to us is that when we're, if we're in the reading room, we're checking something in somebody's been using in there, we get, there is an in-transit process, so we can actually see that something is in transit to the stacks, and sometimes stuff hangs around in the stacks for a few weeks before it actually is reshelved. And so, if we can see that in transit status, that does help. We did toy with having a third service point down in Salem, right? So we could, if we're circulating to curatorial, we could kind of set things in transit to be checked in or, yeah, checked out down in Salem in the curatorial building. But that just got really kind of messy, and it wasn't really worth the extra work of figuring that out and building in kind of a second process just for curatorial requests.
Have you come across any issues with like, do you feel that this prevents it from accidentally not getting checked back in, or like, if there was ever a chance of like not knowing where something is, that this helps really track it down and that you're less likely to not know where something is at any given time? I presume that's part of the reason of having multiple service points, is that like the in-transit allows you to like kind of ensure that everything is going
Yeah,
smoothly.
because I think if we, if you're in the reading room and you happen to have your service point mistakenly set to stacks, and you check something in that a researcher's used, it looks like it's available and on the shelf, right? Like it, there's no, it's like it's been reshelved. And I think that was one of the things we were trying to head off, is exactly that, is kind of have a better handle of at what stage these things that are done with, are in. And I see Jen Hornsby is here. She's our head of reference and access services, and maybe there's something I'm missing here that Jen could fill in on, but
No, I think that what you've said is accurate. The
well, that's
main
good.
reason that we chose to do it that way was we had come from Aeon, and we were used to checking it out to a specific person in the reading room, checking it in, and then reshelving. And we wanted to sort of be able to see that process again. So I think, but I don't know if we hadn't come from Aeon, I don't know if we would have done it this way, but that is pretty much the driving factor.
Yeah, because in Aeon, it's if you haven't used it, it's really easy to kind of like change the status of item on cart and in reshelving and reshelved. So it's yeah, Jen's right. That's where we were coming from, and we were trying to replicate that.
Could
I
we
also
actually see
want
those circul- Oh, sorry.
go ahead.
Oh, could we see those circulation rules? Because this is something that we had talked about over here, and like getting that sort of in transit status to give like a little buffer about the reshelving. So that would be really cool to frankly copy.
Sure. Let me see.
Would you like me to stop sharing so you can share?
Oh, yeah, sure. If I can actually do this right. Let's see.
Just noting too, though, that if you're looking for some of those in transit statuses, you would need to have multiple service points so they could move between them.
And then service point is under, let's see, maybe I'll just share this. Service point is under tenant, right?
Yes. And
Oops.
every time we do change the status, it does ask if we want to print a slip to send it from the reading room back to the stacks. And we opt not to do that. And we just use the original pick slip that we had. So we have one pick slip that stays with the item and a duplicative one that's a ghost slip on the shelf.
So, Can you all can see this now, right? The tenant settings. Okay. Well, that's good.
So I'm actually seeing your Google.
Which Google?
I'm seeing it's your F drive, your Google F
Oh,
drive.
really? Okay. You stopped that
Just
then.
we can dig it up and send it out to this group.
Yeah.
That might be easier.
Nodding because I thought you were about to open the
Oh.
file or something.
Let's see. So we had locations, right?
Yeah. And so service points is actually above the location setup.
Oh, it is. Oh, service point. Thank you. Yeah, so we have reading room. It is set as a pickup location, but I think Jen's right. We could send this out. Print by default. And then we have the, and then we have, oh, what did I share here? So old shelf expiration period is a month. And then we have the stacks. It's not a pickup location. So then when you're checking in, you're just changing the service point to the reading room, and that's what will kind of trigger that in transit process back to the stacks. And then the loan policies are here. So for example, for a 1 day loan, this is what, wait, this isn't the right thing.
You're looking for your circulation
Circ
rules.
rules, thank you. Yeah, I'm getting thrown by all the Zoom toolbars. So yeah, the circulation rules here are pretty simple, right? So for PEM staff or visiting researchers, it's a 1 day loan. Pretty much everything's allowed, and then curatorial might have a 1 day loan for some things, but then a 2 year loan for other things. And I'm pretty sure that everybody is set up to have the pickup point at the reading room. Do I have that right, Lauren? Is that how that's all governed?
Yes. And so in your service point settings, you had some of those things set up as a pickup point. So, like for stack, since it's not a pickup point, that's not something you could
Right.
assign to
Right.
your users.
Yeah. Yeah, not a pickup location right here. Yeah. And I think that's worked fairly well for us. It is nice to have that extra layer of in transit. Thank you. And then I think the other thing I was interested in hearing from folks about was paging slips, and whether or not people are doing anything really cool and interesting with them. We are trying to, we try to reduce the amount of paper that we use, and we do use ghost slips. So on the next slide there, thank you. We print them two up. So that, we just slice the and two copies. So we slice the page in half, and then one copy goes on the shelf, and one copy, travels with the book itself. And you leave them as inactive. What does that mean, Jamie? Or is that a different
Oh,
conversation
this is
going on in the
from.
chat? Oh,
Sorry. Though I
that's
do
okay.
want to ask, how'd you get it to print two up? We were trying to figure that out and I couldn't make it work.
It's just a setting in in Google because we're a Google house. So a setting in Chrome where you can print two pages on one sheet. So that's the trick. And then they print side by side. We always print two copies because I think, we were coming from Aeon. We had these sheets that were perforated in the middle, and we had a template set up so they would print, a duplicate on each side of that perforation. But now, of course, if we only have one slip, then the right half of that page will be blank, and we're still printing two sheets, so it feels a little bit wasteful.
Is it a Chrome setting or is it a printer setting?
It might be a printer setting, but I mean, we are printing using the Chrome browser, so.
Yeah, so when I go to print slips, I select the ones print selected slips, and then I do two copies, and I could screenshot this and send it to y'all later. And then there's a more settings, and the second line down it on my computer is pages per sheet, and I change that to two, and it automatically flips it to landscape and puts them side by side. So it might be fiddling in your settings.
Yeah, it's not something we're governing kind of in the coding of the slip itself.
I would love it if that could happen, which is we had a specific setting in Aeon, so you didn't have to switch back and forth, because the biggest thing I'll do is I'll have my printer set up to print two sides for like everything, but I can't print the pick slips two-sided. So I have to remember to go in and uncheck that.
This may be the hack we need. I was trying to stack them horizontally, and that was a big mess. And
If all publishers used titles that were the same length, that might solve the problem. But anyway, thanks to those of you that did put your slips in this slide deck. It'll be interesting to take a close look at them and see what you all have chosen for what's here. You may have noticed in ours that we have a little next to the call number at the top, we have a little high shelf marker there because we do have shelves that are 12 feet high. And so it's really annoying when you go to reshelf something and it happens to be up there and you need to get on a ladder. And it's nice to kind of like group those. And we've been playing around with the call number suffix a little bit. This is something that we've got an active call in with Lauren. And we're trying to, because we have our broadsides are particularly difficult to figure out where they happen to be. And we have some small broadsides that are in boxes and they have a little note in the item record that says in box. And so we'd love to have the in box notation print on the slip. And so that's what that is there for.
Does anybody else want to talk about their slips?
I think I was next on there, so I can talk briefly about ours. That's just an example. That's not actually what we don't have any undergraduate as like a request or patron group. The idea of it, like having the person's name at the top, is because these are what get put into the books. And then we noticed with our auction catalogs that the auction house isn't like always in the title. So because the way our auction catalogs have been cataloged over a long time, they've only been cataloged by date. So obviously there are lots of auction sale dates that have happened on the same day by different houses because they're not organized that way. I also added, I think, primary contributor, which should ideally, if there is like a contributor, it should tell us like it was hopefully like Sotheby's or Christie's or something. So that gives us more at the time of pulling a little bit of help as to what it is that we're looking for when all of them are about decorative. All auction catalogs are about like in that same sale date like decorative arts from Europe with very similar names. And then yeah, item copy, because for some curators specifically want a specific copy because of our description notes have something like that'll say that there's an inscription that they want to see or hand scrawled, hand colored something. And the note is just also for us. So like sometimes people will put in just like a thank you. Or like we get research requests from our director and she'll put like information about the scan request she got from a patron over email so that she knows once I've retrieved the book, check it out to her. She knows exactly what who was requesting it and then what pages. That's also where they can put if they want to inter-office mail things or if they would like it to go into like their study carol or something to that effect. It's not always used, but it is helpful when we see it. And then yeah, the barcode, because for serials, they don't always have an actual barcode. They're like a system generated barcode, and so it's helpful. And I'm for checking when pulling the things, confirming that the back of the material has the same barcode as the paging slip ensures that we're pulling the right thing. Yeah, so it's just extra.
And I think too, Natalie and I were thinking about like due dates, because I know the pick slips or the slips for interlibrary loan sometimes they'll have like a section that'll say due date with a colon and you manually enter it. Sometimes people will stamp on there, sometimes it'll auto-generate. So I am curious to know what you all do for due dates.
We just don't have them.
Yeah, I think like
Fair enough.
we don't want to print more things, so we're like, how can we reduce the amount of paper we're using? So that's currently why we don't have due dates either. But we keep
Well, I guess we
comparing.
work for new things so often.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think this is a larger question is I like to be managing these what we have circulated, particularly curatorial, more closely so that we can actually, if somebody's had a book for 5 years, lay eyes on it and make sure that it's still in good condition. I think that's down the road. And, occasionally checking in with them to make sure they continue to need all the books that they have would also be good practice, but we're not there yet.
It's reassuring to hear that you're in the same boat, Dan.
Yeah. I mean,
Did
and
people
it was like that. Sorry, it was like that at the Met too. I mean, when I was at the Met, it's just like curators would have books for 20 years, and that's just the way it is. And sometimes you can recall them, and sometimes they put up a fight.
It's like their own little like sub collection, and they were. We've gotten responses like,
Right.
"Well, I don't want to return them because I don't want anyone else to use them because I may need it."
Right. One other thing I didn't mention, and then I see Jamie also has on the Grolier slips is the barcode for the patron account, which we find very useful when we're there at the desk circulating. When people are in front of us, it's easy to zing the barcode for the person to look them up and then kind of turn the slip around and zing the item barcode.
Yeah, I got a little overzealous with the barcodes because we were just having a conversation. My colleague Scott, who does most of the reading room management, had been complaining about not having Aeon because he had it in his last job. And so I thought I would try and throw in the request barcode in case that becomes useful. We haven't really used it, but I haven't taken it off. And, the off chance that, finding the request itself becomes handy, especially like if we need to say cancel it for any reason.
Awesome. Any closing thoughts about slips, or do we want to take a quick look at what in-house use looks like? Or sorry, for use at location looks like.
For things that circulate, do people find that the slips often come back or that they are disappear? Like if these circulate
They
with the inside the book, for instance.
I think we have a fairly decent track record with slips coming back. I mean, Jen might be able to confirm that more. But we have, you know, we have had, there certainly are books that come back without anything in them. But that's part of the reason why we have that, you know, do not remove the slip highlighted in yellow. We hope that folks notice that.
It's really a Dana
Is it?
question for stuff that actually circulates
Yeah.
without the reading room. When items are circulated in the reading room, we just keep the slip on the desk, and that gives us a sort of like eyes glance of how many items are out at a time.
Does anybody band their books with the slips that you add little strips of paper so it's kind of not attached but on the cover so it's harder to lose?
We don't do that.
We just do that for our interlibrary loan. But it is a useful way to reuse some of that paper or the excess printing paper.
Okay, so we are heading towards rapidly towards the end of the hour. So we can take a quick look at for use at location. I am doing it in this snapshot environment. So these settings are going to get wiped out today. But if anybody wants to go play with this today, it is configured. I have a test user and a couple of items, but you could add items as well. So in this case, I added a loan type and I created items with that loan type so that I could have a circulation rule specific to that. I had to enable the for use at location in the loan policy, and then I wrote circulation rules that would apply to these items. I think it's also good if you're gonna do this, thinking about some of these things we've talked about, like what would the request policies be? Would they be different from other materials? Did you need to designate a separate rule? Also thinking about notice templates and policies. If you're sending notices and there's something different that needs to go into the notice, thinking about how that might look different. I did also put a link here to anybody who didn't see the session that they did in the implementers. This was actually the National Library of Sweden was talking through it. They were the primary drive behind this development, and so they kind of have a much more detailed explanation that I'm going to get to in a couple of minutes. But looking at this, so I have hopefully this probably should refresh this environment to make sure it has not logged me out. In inventory, I put a couple, I created a location to make it easy to see these items. But coming in, if I want to place a hold on this, so as a user, I would, it's maybe coming through from your discovery, but within Infolio, creating this request for my user, I have these configured so that it's only a page request. So that's why that's the only option there. And I'm at the interim service point. So that's the service point I'm going to use here. And so I can place this request. And then if I have pulled this off the shelf and bring it back up to the desk, you're going to see that I have a little drop-down menu here that applies to for use at location. It defaults to close loan and return item, but I'm gonna toggle this and then for this scan, it actually shouldn't matter because this is the scan that is acknowledging I have something on hold. And so I'm getting this pop-up here that I have something that is awaiting receipt. I'm not gonna print that slip, but I have it in a status of awaiting pickup. So all of the details about this item, this should look like any request that you have encountered before. You can reprint the slip if you did need it, or get details about the request or the item. We're doing rapid fire example here, so I'm the patron now, and I am did not remember my barcode, so we're gonna look me up. But I'm here to check things out, and you're going to get bring up this user and see that they have something awaiting pickup at this service point. And when I enter this, you're kind of see the details that the loan policy, I created a policy that was in-house use. But when we go over to the loan details, it's going to show that this item is checked out. And so I use it in the reading room for the day. I bring it back up to the de at the desk and say, you know what, I still need this tomorrow. And so at that point, when it gets checked in, we're going to make sure we have this set to keep on hold shelf. And when I check this in, we're going to see that it's saying that it has a status of checked out, but that we're keeping it on the hold shelf here. So this is not showing that this is back in circulation. This is having me go send it back to the hold shelf so the patron can come back the next day or later that day or whatever it is to use the item again. And so again, we can come back in this session and look me back up. And again, we're going to see that pop up the next day that I have something that is available for me. And I'm clicking in, and again, it's checked back out. I think the rule I set on this was a week, so that's why these dates look so far out for this that they're checking out for a date. But we could change that rule so they checked out for just a day, or they checked out for a few hours, whatever that rule should be. And then if I come back today and I say, you know what, I'm actually done with this item. So this time I can close the loan and return it to the shelf. And so when I check that back in, I'm now going to see that the status has gone to available. So this is, or if we were moving between service points, it would go in transit so that it needed to go back to that other service point. But for this, you can return it or keep it on the hold shelf for as long as you need to. There are rules that are pertaining to when your holds expire, et cetera, so that you would get some of those same processes as before. But this lets somebody come back multiple times to review an item before the system is sending it back to the shelf. So that was like the 5-minute overview, tops of this, but I think it's really cool functionality. It's coming with Trillium. So it's another release out, but it's something that hopefully will be useful for everybody that's doing circulation in the reading room.
And Lauren, you can set that drop down to ask for action so you get that you get prompted every time whether you know which one you want for a given. Okay. Great.
And again, if anybody wants to go play today, the rules are set up in this system that's linked on the agenda. My user is Museum's Test. And if you toggle locations to the reading room, I created two items, but you can create more items. There's not a lot in the system, but kind of for what the workflow looks like, you can work through that. Yeah, I'm
That's great.
excited for it.
And if you do go and watch the video from the implementers, there's probably 10 minutes of chat before they actually get started. So you can go way into the recording and you don't have to listen to them talk about whatever they talked about, weather or snow or something.
Probably. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it looks like we are kind of at time to wrap up, but I would appreciate any insight on what people might want to talk about next time. You can post it on Slack or you can ping me directly so we can make sure we get something kind of prepped on the agenda. Awesome. Everybody have a great rest of your day. This is a great conversation.
Yes. Thanks, Lauren. Thanks, everyone. See you
Thanks,
soon.
guys.
Dan.